The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk. Travel on The Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Ryanair. Nothing quite says I love you like a Ryanair gift card. The perfect gift for couples.
I'm joined in studio by Dr. Arthur Cummings, consultant ophthalmic surgeon at the Wellington Clinic in the Beacon. Arthur, good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Beth.
So many questions already flooding in, so let's get straight into them. Could you ask Arthur about MGD in the eyes? I'm suffering very badly with this and I've tried everything. I'm using a head mask, eye drops and a humidifier in the office where I work. I can't wear makeup, but when I occasionally do, my eyes flare up so badly it takes days to calm them down. I've changed all my makeup to hypoallergenic formula. Any ideas? So what's MGD?
So MGD, Pat's the most common foundational reason for dry eye. So it's meibomian gland dysfunction. So the tear film has, as a baseline, a mucus layer that binds the water to the surface, then the water layer, and then on top of the water layer is an oil layer that protects the water layer from evaporating. And the oil layer comes from the meibomian glands. So MGD is meibomian gland dysfunction. And your listener is 100% correct. It's a major irritation. And it's something we see frequently is exactly what this person said is, I've tried everything, But there's so many things to try. And one of the things she hasn't tried yet is the use of light. And light's being used in multiple ways right now. And there are two ways we have in the clinic. One's called IPL, which you'll be aware of, intense pulse light therapy, which people mostly use for skin lesions, veins on the face, pigment lesions, those kinds of things. But then also something called low-level light therapy. And so light's got the ability to reactivate the mitochondria in cells. And the mitochondria are the energy sources of cells. Mm-hmm. So it gets them functioning again. So what we found in the last couple of years, what's helping most for MGD, in fact, is a session of light therapy with IPL and with low-level light therapy.
So that might be something to try, given
Absolutely,
all the other efforts failed.
Yes, and there are a number of facilities around the country offering that. So even in small towns sometimes, it's worth finding out. Low-level light therapy and IPL.
I'm a type 1 diabetic who has issues with diabetic retinopathy. Is there any supplement that can leave? Oh, no, that's just the first question. I'll leave that stand alone.
Right, so diabetic retinopathy, yeah, it gets staged into different levels. And the first kind is called background, where it's early. But the key thing with diabetic retinopathy, there are two key things. The first one is to control the blood sugar. And the earlier you control the blood sugar and monitor it well and keep it within a healthy range, the better you're going to do long-term. And the second part of diabetic retinopathy is making sure your blood pressure is controlled. So make sure you've got a great GP who's looking after those things and making you aware of how important it is to look after them.
So control of the blood sugar and
the blood pressure.
The blood pressure. Now, what is retinopathy?
So retina comes from retina, the back of the eye, the film of the eye, and pathy is always related to pathology. So it's pathology of the retina thanks to it's basically a microangiopathy, which is a long name for a disease of the small little blood vessels that get clogged by the sugar and the stickiness of the blood. So you first of all get little bleeds, and then when you have these obstructions, you start getting leaks. So it's a combination of bleeding, which leads to areas that don't get enough oxygen, so ischemia, and lead to swelling, edema.
Now, the second part of this question, are there any supplements that can alleviate floaters caused by diabetic retinopathy? The floaters remain in vitreous for a long period, and as soon as they're cleared, another one will happen.
Yeah, not that we're aware of. We were part of a study maybe 5-6 years ago looking at the use of a supplement with floaters, and we found no difference, and it didn't go anywhere. But I see now recently again, there's talk again of a study. So I'm not sure. Floaters, I think the key thing with floaters is to explain to patients exactly how they impact their vision, and that your subconscious brain needs to hear this conversation. Because if you're walking around and you suddenly see something in your field of vision, your brain's programmed to think there's a threat, there's something like a bee or a wasp or a cloud of smoke or something in front of you. But when the brain at a subconscious level hears the explanation that no, this thing you're seeing is not outside, it's inside your eye, it then has a way of starting to ignore it for you. Mm-hmm. And so your brain starts filtering out the nonsense, the noise.
So you've got to train it.
Yeah, you can train it, yeah. And then the ultimate treatment is removing the gel inside the eye. The floaters are inside the gel. But that surgery is not without risk, and you'd have to see a retinal specialist to get their advice on whether that's the right thing for you or not.
I'm 5 months pregnant and I'm finding it hard to wear contact lenses all of a sudden. The lens is blurry in my eye. Is it possible that my eyesight has deteriorated? I definitely cannot see as well with them, but au contraire, my glasses are fine.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question because I'm assuming that the glasses and the contact lenses are the same prescription. And if that's the case, then you've got to find another reason for this. And it might be related to dry eye. So during pregnancy, obviously, there are a lot of hormonal changes and they can impact the ocular surface, so dryness. That might be one thing. So what you could try is with your contact lenses, use an ocular lubricant, a non-preserved lubricant, and see if that makes a difference. And then another very good question you asked was, can your vision change during pregnancy? And the answer is yes, it can. So while you're pregnant, you can have your prescription change.
And will it revert?
Most times it does. Yeah, most times it goes back.
Okay. And next one. I suffer from itchy eyes and they become bloodshot if I touch them. Any cream available to help?
Yeah, there are lots of creams and drops you can use, and I'll discuss them with you in a moment. But the most important thing with any time your eyes are itchy, and like with any allergy, is identify the source, identify the allergen. It doesn't make sense to, if you're allergic to pollen, to continuously take antihistamines when you could rather just avoid the pollen. Mm. Pollen's not a great example, in fairness, because it's all around us. But people are very often allergic to feather pillows, feathers. So if that's the source of your allergy, then rather avoid feather pillows. So yeah. Try and determine what the allergen is. And then once you start using medications for allergies, the key thing to do is to use medications that are preservative-free. If you tend to be allergic to things, you're going to be allergic to the preservatives in the medications mm-hmm. too. So try and use preservative-free eye drops.
Now, can you transmit something from one eye to another? If you've got an itchy eye and you don't know what's causing it, and you kind of rub your finger on one and then rub your finger on the other.
You could. I mean, that's how infections get transferred, yeah. Infections. But you could do the same thing with an allergen. If, say, you're walking down the street and you get something in your eye, like a little insect, and you rub your eye and then rub the other eye, you could transfer that material and you could have the allergen in both eyes. But most times allergies affect both eyes if it's to an allergen like pollen or feathers.
I need 3.5 reading glasses. I use glasses for driving and I have early cataracts. I've had conflicting advice. Can all these issues be corrected with surgery? I'm willing to travel anywhere. That's from Tricia in Cork.
Yeah, they can all be corrected with surgery. It's an issue we're seeing now is with the available, so many procedures available to us now. Some people are staying abreast of what's available and offering them all. And you can equate them to being a handyman who comes to your house with a toolbox full of tools. They can fix whatever you put in front of them. And others are sticking to one solution. So that's like a handyman coming to us with a hammer in the toolbox. So whatever they're going to fix is going to involve a hammer. And it's not always going to be appropriate. So I think the day's coming where if the solution you're looking for is not provided by the person you're speaking to, it's going to be almost a duty of care from their perspective to say, well, I don't offer that, but I know someone who does. And, you know, at least get you the proper opinion of what's out there right now for you.
In the case of cataracts, do they always replace the lens?
Yes.
Yeah. So can you get a lens that will give you reading and distance?
Yes, you can. So those lenses are called trifocal lenses. They give you the whole range. You get lenses that are also called EDOF, extended depth of focus, or increased range of focus lenses. They won't give you the entire range. So they will typically give you in one eye distance and intermediate. But then in the second eye, you do a bit of mini monovision, blended vision. And in the second eye, you aim then for intermediate and near. So between the two eyes, the brain's got distance, intermediate, and near.
I found when I had my eyes lasered years and years ago, one for distance and one for reading, everything was fine except in very low light. You go into a restaurant and you're trying to look at the menu, and because there isn't sufficient information going into your eyes,
into one eye. It's going into one eye.
Into one eye, or trying to play sport at dusk.
Exactly.
You might miss the ball.
Exactly right. Yes. Yeah.
Is it unusual to get cataracts for under 60s? As I've heard, it's more common for over 60s. Treatment is straightforward, I hear.
Yeah, your listener's correct. Cataracts are certainly more common in over 60s, but there's a very well-known story in ophthalmic circles about a Washington Post journalist who was going in for vision correction surgery. She wanted LASIK. And the doctor said, well, she was in her 40s, and he said, well, you can't have LASIK because you've got cataracts. And she said, what? Can't be right. He said, no, you have cataracts. And she didn't believe him, came back and she'd read a lot about it and said, you haven't tested me for all these different metabolic causes and congenital causes. He said, we can do them all, but I can tell you now they're going to come back negative, which they did. So she wrote a piece in the Washington Times on her as a 40-year-old getting cataracts. And she was overwhelmed with the responses from
so many others. Yeah,
exactly. So it's more common in older age group, but you see it in the 40s.
How long does it take a cataract to grow to the point where it really impedes vision?
So that's interesting. And that's why when you see a patient for the first time who's not yet ready for surgery, you can't tell them when it's going to happen. Once you see them a second time, say a year apart, and you see there's minimal change, you can tell them this is going to take a long time.
Yeah.
But you can see them a year later and see a big change, and then you know you can predict there's a, you know, a faster trajectory.
I want to get ICL, but I don't live in Dublin because it requires a follow-up appointment after 24 hours. Do they have an overnight option, or is it okay if someone just stays in a local hotel?
So ICL, for your listeners, is implantable contact lens. It's a revolutionary treatment. It's been around for 30 years, but it's growing now at a rate that we haven't seen before for a number of reasons. It doesn't have an impact on ocular surface. You can one day, when you want a trifocal lens implant, if you've had laser, sometimes that's not possible. Yeah, you're not touching the cornea, so it's got a lot of advantages, and it's reversible. And it's important if you have ICL surgery because it's key, the size of the ICL. And they only come in four sizes. So the size.
So is this a permanent lens that goes in over your own lens?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay, so it's a built-in contact lens.
That's exactly right.
No taking it out and...
You can take it out, but you don't take it out.
Yeah.
You only take it out. In all my 30 years of doing it, I've never taken one out. So, but it's you need to be seen the next morning to make sure that the lens sizing is good.
I have a slight twitch in one eye for about 3 weeks. I used eye drops, but despite improvement, the twitch is still there.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I had the same thing many, many years ago. And when it first happened, I had kids who were 2 and 3 years old. We were sitting on an island near Africa on holiday. My eyes started twitching. When I got back to work, we didn't have the internet then, but we had access to university libraries across the world. And I read everything I could about it and found that there's no cause. It's aggravated by things like stress, lack of sleep, too much coffee, and issues like that. And as fast as it starts, it just stops one day.
So it's not an ocular or optical thing?
No, not at all. And it's a thing that goes away. Just give it time, it'll disappear.
I had Graves' disease before having my thyroid removed. I'm on medication for over 20 years for hypothyroidism. I wear glasses all the time. However, my eyesight seems to change significantly within 2 years when getting my eye test, going from 450 plus to 550 plus.
So Graves' disease is the ocular manifestations of hypothyroidism. And mostly it manifests in dryness and maybe the eye bulging slightly. So you're sort of more exposed. It sounds like that's under control. If you're getting cataracts, the plus 450 would more likely go to plus 350. So someone who's actually becoming more long-sighted is suggesting you've had something all your life called latent hyperopia, which means you've never been fully corrected for your error. 30% of people who are long-sighted have latent hyperopia. It's difficult to get the exact right glasses for you, but eventually it manifests.
44 years old, out of the blue, had flashing light and blurriness, one eye. It's PVD. When can I expect the blurriness to clear and anything I could be doing? The retina is okay, based on emergency department checks. 4 weeks now since it started.
All right, that's a super question. I recall so well during COVID that we had a remote service or virtual service, and 6 out of 7 questions were around this PVD. So that's when the jelly in the back of the eye comes loose. It's a universal finding, happens to everyone. It's age-related. It happens earlier if you're very short-sighted, later if you're longer-sighted. And when the jelly comes loose, it's got the potential to possibly cause a little tear in the retina, and that your listener knows that. So the thing to look out for there is suddenly seeing a black curtain. But the haze is now being caused by the jelly lying in front of the retina. It's like another interface you're looking through, like a sheet of plastic maybe. And that can take anything, unfortunately, up to a couple of years to disappear. Mm. Again, much like floaters, it's important to understand what it is and the brain can start filtering it out.
So stop worrying. Get on with it. Okay. What about discoloration of the white of the eye caused by sun damage? Is this a risk to the health of the eye?
The risk there would be in terms of what they call surface eye, and that's where that area is drier than usual, so you can get the tissue proliferating and getting thicker and eventually cause a thing called the pterygium, which is a little growth over the eye. So the key thing for now is in the interim is just make sure the eye is well lubricated and see someone to get an opinion on whether you should be worried or not.
Can you ask Arthur, if you have a weak cornea, can you wear contact lenses?
Yes, you can. And there's some weak corneas where the only solution is a contact lens. But then the contact lens wouldn't be a soft lens, but more one of the specialized lenses that are harder and rigid.
Zigzag pattern in the eyes, on and off, no headaches. Hospitals say ocular migraine. What causes that?
So that sounds very much correct. It sounds that they're right. So migraine, generally speaking, is where you first of all get constriction or narrowing of the blood vessels. The muscles contract and narrow, and so there's less blood supply, and that's when you get the aura, the visual symptoms like this. Yeah. Is. And then once that's happened and the little muscles are exhausted, they relax, and then the vessel expands and you get this throbbing. What happens as we get older, the vessels become more rigid, so you don't get the throbbing component anymore. Now, when you speak of ocular or retinal migraine, that's when the only vessels involved are not the brains anymore, but just the eye or just the retina. And then you can get these symptoms with nothing else.
No headaches.
No headaches, nothing at all. So it's just caused by vasoconstriction, the little vessels constricting.
Now, this one is probably a common complaint. My eyes stream water when I go out in the cold. It only started recently. That's from Dave.
Yeah, that's 100% dry eye. You have dry eyes. So we've spoken about this
before. It seems counterintuitive. It's like your eyes are streaming and you've got dry eye.
So that's exactly right. It's very counterintuitive. So what happens when you're out in the cold and you don't have a good tear film? The eye feels drier than usual. It feels more exposed. So the brain interprets that as being a foreign body. It thinks you've got a foreign body on the cornea. And the way it washes out a foreign body is switching on the tap, the reflex tears, to wash it out. So eyes that are running are almost invariably a sign of an underactive tear film. There's another reason too, and that's when there's a blockage of the little duct that drains tears.
Mm-hmm.
So that's worth making sure that duct's open.
But will drops address this problem?
If the cause is dry eye per se, drops will definitely help.
I was assaulted with a glass almost 20 years ago. I lost the lens and got stitches in the cornea. Should I consider a new lens and cornea transplant now or wait for technology to improve further over the coming years? And what are the risks?
I think for the moment, the technology is there to help with this. And the first thing I would do, because it's been 20 years, the first thing I would do is see a contact lens specialist who can give you a rigid contact lens and show you the potential of the eye. And once you see the potential, you can make a decision. Is it worthwhile pursuing this, yes or no? And what's counterintuitive too is you may find the vision in that eye improve drastically, but binocularly with both eyes open, you start having conflict and you might decide, I don't really want that. I'd rather keep the eyes a spare wheel kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you want to do that test first to see, should I pursue this route? So see a contact lens specialist.
Mm-hmm. One of our listeners quite confused about the number of different lasers that are laser techniques that are using. What are they?
So the three basic ones, one called PRK, which is treating on the surface, other one called LASIK, where you create a little flap and then do the treatment on the cornea and place the flap back again.
Yeah, that's what I had.
And yes, I've had the two.
I mean, it's quite strange, but not in any way painful.
Yeah, exactly. It's very interesting. And then the other one that's newer now, it's been around for about 10 years, is something called lenticular extraction, where it's like small incision surgery for laparoscopic surgery, where you're making a very small incision and the laser creates this lenticle that you remove. It doesn't have the same level of precision, but it's got advantages over LASIK, where you don't have a flap that can move.
My eye swells up due to stress, sun cream, and even when I'm not wearing makeup. Looks like an allergic reaction, but it does subside after 24 hours. Any ideas? It's been going on for years.
Yeah, I would look for the cause of an allergen. And the most common allergens are feather pillows, pollen, house dust, and house mites. And see an allergist. You know, people today can do an array of tests that will tell you specifically what you're allergic to.
When people talk about the eye swelling up, it's not the eyeball itself that swells. I presume it's swelling around the eye.
Exactly right. It's the skin on top of the eye, the conjunctiva. Mm.
Well, so many questions coming in, but we've come to the end. Arthur, thank you very much for joining us. That's Arthur Cummings from the Beacon, from the Wellington Clinic at the Beacon. Arthur, thank you very much. And that's all we've time for.
Travel on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Ryanair. Nothing quite says I love you like a Ryanair gift card. The perfect gift.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Gift for couples.